What is up? This is Bax coming to you from Irate Minority. Welcome back again. As you can see, we cut out the Blog Talk Radio entry. I was hoping that word. Haven't yet signed any audio as far as the entry goes. Don't have any clips set up yet, but I am working on that. And soon enough, I will have it all set up. As I always tell you, you know, this is a work in progress. It's something that will continue to get better, continue to have more guests, and also, you know, some guest hosting, stuff like that in the future. So definitely be on the lookout. You can check me out and us here at Irate Minority on irateminority.net, doing some blog posting there. Going to continue to grow the site as well. Going to have different artwork and some videos, stuff like that, links to some of our contributors, and just in general, you know, the team here at Irate Minority. Also, we have a Twitter account. It's @_IrateMinority_. And we also have a YouTube channel, Irate Minority. And, of course, on Facebook, Irate Minority. You can also send me a friend request. I am Bax Paxton. So feel free, contact me if you want to talk, if you want something you'd like to hear on the show. Definitely give me a shout. I can arrange that. Got some info prepared. Didn't go all out this evening. We may go an hour. We may go two. We'll just kind of see how it goes. So if you read anything on Blog Talk Radio or the Facebook page about tonight's show, basically the heading for the show is Bunker Buster. I'm going to talk about some of the bunkers that are constructed or have been constructed throughout the United States. There are plenty around the world. It's not something that, of course, just happens here. And we're not talking about just doomsday bunkers in general. We're talking about the government bunkers, the bunkers for the elite. Now, you know, I'd be more than happy to discuss regular bunkers as well. There was a really cool show, Doomsday Preppers or Doomsday Bunkers, both of which dealt with that. Kind of looking at different people who prepped for usually specific emergencies, but some were very general, talked about how they would prepare, you know, from people who lived out in rural areas to people in the city who deal with, you know, very limited space and their plans for escape and, you know, if they had to hole up what they did, you know, as far as supplies go. So there's plenty of interesting shows. Some of them are on Netflix. Some of them are still going on. So tonight, you know, we'll talk a little bit about different things. There are many contingency plans in place for those in power if something devastating were to happen in America. Taxpayers have forked out a whole lot of cash for many of these bunkers and end-of-day resorts, you could call some of them, that will not be admitting any of us. You know, these are for something called continuity of government, which basically means keeping the government intact. And, you know, we are not part of that. We are just the public, the citizens. And there are not, to my knowledge, large bunkers or places that we could go if there were some kind of existential threat, threat from above, from another country, and internal strife, medical emergencies such as plagues. And plagues are real, right? I mean, this isn't something – I'm not talking about the bubonic plague, which actually still exists, by the way. It's not something that's totally been eradicated. The bubonic plague is still active in many third world countries. I mean, tuberculosis is still a thing. I mean, not so much in the United States. It happens. But, I mean, tuberculosis kills people in the world, and that's something – it's upsetting. I think that, you know, we've come to a place where we – technology and the medical expertise to eradicate things like this, and there are still people dying regularly because they live in an impoverished area, a poor country. They don't have access to medical care like we do here, which I won't get started on that this evening, but still, you know, afforded or not, there's medical care here. And for the most part, you know, if you go to the emergency room, they have to treat you. So, you know, you're not going to die. You're just going to get, you know, saddled with a whole bunch of medical debt that you're going to pay off for however long until you decide to file bankruptcy or just fork out dough for years and years and years until you hit the grave. Anyway, this week's episode, you know, we're going to take a look at some of these places, different plans that are set up for protecting those that have caused the problem. You know, we're currently having problems, and it's going to continue, it's sad to say. And part of my issue with a lot of this, let me first say this. You know, the continuity of government is important because we have to have some sort of structure and control given our current political economic climate. If our country descended into anarchy, then you know, it would be ripe for the picking, so to speak. I mean, invasion would be imminent. It may already be if something like that happens. However, if there's not any kind of control, then, you know, it's going to be hard to get different military branches communicating and on the same page to fight said threat. So, I mean, I'm not sitting here saying I'm totally against continuity of government plans, but, you know, my main concern is that we have all these places that have been constructed and plans in place that don't include a place for the common man, the citizens. You know, you can't save everybody, but still it's disturbing. So, as I was driving home from work, and I mentioned this on a prior show, I looked up at a billboard, and the billboard was put up by the, I believe it was the DHHR, it may have been a different organization. But anyway, the billboard is, I mean, it's not in any special place. It's right along, you know, one of the main routes that you travel along. And, you know, it was very, I don't want to say scary, because this is something that is no surprise to me. It's something that I know is, I don't know how to say it. Okay, I'll cut out the description here. So the billboard simply says, the first 72 is on you. And, you know, this is DHR, it is Red Cross, it is, you know, for the most part, the first 72 hours is on you. If there is some sort of weather emergency, if there is some sort of issue, let's say the power lines go down or there's a flood and all these areas are cut off, the power goes out, and, you know, anything like this, any natural disaster or localized issue, the idea is that the first 72 hours are up to you to keep yourself warm or cool, depending on the season, fed, and have water as well. Because the authorities, such as FEMA and even the Coast Guard, you know, government organizations, Red Cross, whatever, are going to need at least that amount of time to restore power, restore order, get to where you are. You know, all of these issues are going to be a problem. And that includes, you know, local services. I mean, if you're cut off from hospitals or if you're cut off from the fire station and you have some sort of fire, I mean, you know, it's going to be on you and your neighbors to make sure that you and they survive. So, you know, when you hear people who are preppers, doomsday preppers, or, you know, some people view them as conspiracy nuts, you know, it's important to know that it's expected of you and everyone else to be able to self-sustain for 72 hours. And, you know, that's just common sense, I guess you would say. But, you know, a lot of people don't think about that, and we have lived in this bubble for so long. I mean, 9/11 kind of tore that down a little bit, but people get comfortable again real quick, and I won't get into it, but I think we've traded a lot of freedoms for safety, given things like the Patriot Act and things like that. But I digress. So the first 72 hours is on you. Okay. Now, if you think about the first 72 hours, and there's a flood, power goes out, whatever, most people could probably get by 72 hours with whatever you have in your house. I mean, you may not be eating the best stuff, but you could probably grind out 72 hours. If not, you may want to think about getting some canned meats like tuna and, bottled water. For the most part, it's pretty cheap. You can get, 24 or 32 pack of Aquafina for around $5. Those are usually good for at least a year. It's always a good idea to have a couple of those. And worst case scenario, your hot water tank holds a good bit of water, and there's usually a valve at the bottom. So if you have some kind of big container or, at the very least, you can have a big trash bag and open it up, fill some water up in the bag, take the bag to the sink, poke some tiny holes in it, fill up some water bottles. It'll get you through a little while. So, these are for short-term emergencies. These are so someone can get in, help you out, make sure you're okay. And that's fine. But something that everyone should consider and think about is the idea that 72 hours is a conservative estimate. If something were to happen on a larger scale involving multiple states, God forbid the whole country, then you're probably looking a little bit longer. Now, provided it's not some kind of war or horrible flu epidemic, influenza epidemic, then you're probably looking closer to 2 weeks. 2 weeks for FEMA to get in here, set up stations, your local government to come in and try and help out, getting the power restored through your local power companies. You're looking at a lot longer amount of time. I mean, here recently, upward towards the top of Appalachia, there were some storms that knocked down a whole bunch of power lines. I mean, you're talking 20, 30,000 people plus out of power. And, it was a huge problem because it was in the middle of the summer. People didn't have water. They had no electric. There were, several older people I know died due to heat stroke, things of that nature, medical problems. And, like I said, your local hospital may be out of power, and those generators only run for so long. And then you have these jerks out there who were selling those same $5 bricks of water for 20, 30, 40 bucks. Now, they got a hold of a lot of those people and, basically made it illegal to do such things. But, if you're 2 weeks out of getting help, and the only way for you to get water or something for your family is to pay some jerk in gold or silver or 30, 40, 50 bucks a pop for water, you're going to do it because you have no other choice, right? And that's assuming that you can get to the ATM, because most people don't keep money on them, okay? Most people don't collect gold and silver or, keep a grand at home, in cash just to be careful. So, those are reasonable problems that you could encounter. Now, when you think about the seedier population, when you think about people who would come and take what they don't have or take what is needed and then resell it or, whatever the case, those people are out there. And I myself prepare the best I can. I'm nowhere near where I'd like to be or want to be. However, I do my best. And, I always tell people that I'm not worried about the zombies. I'm not worried about the government or the police, okay, because you worry about the zombie apocalypse in some mocking tone. I get that quite a bit. I said, no, I'm not. What I'm worried about are the rape gangs, are the people that are going to come and take your stuff, or try to harm you before help arrives, before people can get there. Because I firmly believe that most of you out there can name at least one person that you know or at least think would do something unsavory or criminal or whatever the case may be if the opportunity presented itself. Now, I'll promise you this, that there are a lot more out there than you think. And I'll pose this question to you as well. What wouldn't you do to keep your family safe? Let that one sit and marinate a little bit. Because especially those of you who have kids, there's not much you wouldn't do to make sure they were okay, to make sure they survived. I hope it doesn't come to that. I really do. I mean, I do prepare the best I can. You know, I always advocate for preparedness. I think it's important. But, you know, I truly am in my heart of hearts, so to speak, hope that nothing ever happens in my lifetime or my kid's lifetime or anyone for that matter to where we're going to have to fight for scraps, you know, that we're going to have to worry about our survival. And I mean that in a literal sense, because right now I am worried. I mean, there are things that happen that make me gravely concerned for my future and my children and my family and my friends. You know, it's alarming, and we all need to be aware. We all need to prepare. So there are plans in place that don't involve you and I. I'd like to take a moment right here, throw out the number. So if you want to give a call and you want to talk about anything tonight, you want to get on the show, the number is 619-924-9819. That is 619-924-9819. I'll refer to you by your area code when you call in. You can give me your name after that. I don't have any call screeners. It's just backs here going solo, at least at this point. So definitely, you know, give us a call if you want to chime in or you've got something to say or you want to change the topic. That's fine. We try to stay a little bit at least in the area. Crafty may call in tonight. I don't know. He's a busy man nowadays. So if he's got time, we might get him to call in and give us the lowdown on FEMA regions because he is pretty knowledgeable in that area. I don't know. I haven't really talked to Atomizer. So Atomizer, if you're listening in, give us a call, man. I know you're knowledgeable as well. If you remember the original shows for Front Row at the Freak Show, that was Crafty, the Atomizer, and myself, Bax, and we put on a show called Front Row at the Freak Show, and you can currently still find both Atomizer and Crafty. Atomizer is pretty much based on Twitter right now. I don't know if he's got any other projects going on, but he's definitely on Twitter. And if you'd like to check him out, then you can find him. He is the Atheist Preacher at Atomizer1. And that is Adamizer. So the Atheist Preacher at Atomizer1. And if you want to go back and forth with him, he's always a willing party. And you can find Crafty on YouTube. He's been doing a lot of work under the Front Row Atheist. And he's been putting a lot of videos up, stuff like that. So if you want to check either of them out, please do so. They're good guys, and we may see them on the show sometime in the future. So, lost my train of thought there. Okay. Anyway, so that number again is 619-924-9819. That's 619-924-9819. So the government has plans in place. And as I mentioned earlier, there's something called continuity of government. Now, the continuity of government simply means that if something were to happen, and this includes, you know, an assassination or a sinkhole opens up and, you know, part of the government falls into that, if they were victims of some kind of illness and that happened, or if there was an attack on the United States, nuclear or other invasion, then there are plans set up so that members of the Congress, the Senate, the judicial branch, and the executive branch all are evacuated and sent to a secret location. This is a 24 hours a day plan. Okay, it's constantly being updated, constantly being changed. An interview with a former chief of staff, you know, he actually said that when he was taken to view one of these facilities, his eyes were pretty much blindfolded, ears were closed, had no idea where he was, and then boom, he was there. It's a closely guarded secret, as it should be. I mean, if it's any real continuity of government plan, then most people are not going to know anything about it or its location, because if so, then there'd be little point to have it, because that would be simply the first place that is attacked. So it's not as though I'm advocating, well, we need to know where it is. No, you don't. No, we don't need to know where it is. Just like we don't need to know all the military plans during war. All this stuff doesn't need to be broadcasted. I think that's ridiculous. I think that's a stupid way to think about it. I'll just say it. I'll tell you how I really feel. Because you broadcast this information, then what good is the information? If I tell you I'm going to come and invade your house next week on Saturday at 4 p.m., either you're not going to be there or you're going to be there waiting with Mr. Remington, okay? I mean, hey, that's common sense, all right? So it's a closely guarded secret. So in 1992, one of these closely guarded secrets was exposed. And this was a place called the Greenbrier. Now, the Greenbrier is a luxury golf course. There's this very nice hotel. And there was some construction done. And it was right toward the end of the Cold War, you know, or in the heat of the Cold War. Heat of the Cold War. So Eisenhower goes to the Greenbrier. He says, okay, I want 120 or 112,000 square foot bunker built here. And so what they did was they basically made this press release, so to speak, that the hotel is going to be expanded. Okay. And what they did, they expanded the hotel and built the bunker simultaneously, so that your average Joe sees the construction and said, oh, hey, they're building more stuff on that fancy hotel over there. Yep, figures them richy riches. That's what they do. So, nobody was the wiser. I mean, we didn't see anything wrong with it if we were to drive by or if we lived in the area. So, still pretty closely held secret. I'm sure people working on it, they were probably government contractors. They probably signed non-disclosure agreements because anybody with a common bit of knowledge and sense would probably say, huh, this is a lot of concrete and pretty deep underground for an expansion to the hotel. Oh, well, another bucket of concrete. So, and when I talk about a lot of concrete, I'm talking about like 5 foot thick walls, okay? And this place boasted a 30-year supply of food. There were 1,100 beds. There was a television studio. There were, there were the amenities that you would need. There was an actual little area where it had room for the president, and it had room for the exact number of seats, actually, for the members of Congress. So, that's what this place was. It was set up for this. Well, in 1992, this information was exposed. And now you can actually go to the Greenbrier and tour the bunker. It is a tourist attraction because, if you think about it, when something like this is exposed, then it's a target. There's no reason to be there anymore. And if you're thinking about going there and staying, you might be okay. The blast door on the front is about 25 tons worth of steel, which some of these things are constructed to withstand nuclear bomb blast or a bunker buster, so to speak. Those are actual bombs that are designed to tunnel and burrow in and destroy bunkers. But I'm unique and hilarious, so the name of the show is Bunker Buster because I'm busting bunkers. But, you know, of course, I don't have any kind of real information because I'm not in any kind of loop, and even if I was, I wouldn't expose where a secret government facility is because I'm just some dude with a normal job and a pretty sweet radio show, and I'm not in any position to expose that kind of information. Unfortunately, I'm not independently wealthy and on the cutting edge of media. However, I will educate everyone the best I can and share what I have and hopefully get some interesting discussions going. And that's what we do here at Irate Minority. Just get the discussion going, get ideas open. That's what we're about here. That's how we move forward. That's how we come together. Disagreement is great. Argument is great. But, you know, this out in the street screaming and pointing your finger and basically calling people the other instead of brother, you know. And that's right. You can use that. Feel free. Write that down. That's right. But the point is, you know, that division is becoming apparent and becoming more and more of a problem in today's world. So, anyway, I digress again. You know, I get on that topic often, but it's important to me. The point is, though, you know, this information that I'm giving you is common knowledge, some of it. And before I say it, I will, you know, gladly say that, you know, whatever I'm talking about is conjecture, is not proven information, is maybe a conspiracy theory. I am not a conspiracy theorist, okay? I don't see myself as that. I don't create conspiracy theories. I don't have anything that I've come up on my own, such as, you know, I don't know, the reptilians are taking over the government one by one. I don't have any brand new conspiracy theory. So I'm not a conspiracy theorist. If anything, I am a conspiracy analyst. I like to look at different conspiracy theories. I like to think about them, talk about them, analyze them, and try to connect the dots, because behind every bit of fiction is a grain of truth. And, you know, and that goes for stuff that we read, stuff we hear, stuff we see. You know, behind every lie, there is a grain of truth. So, moving on. I think I covered pretty much everything about the Greenbrier. You know, as I said, in 1992, it was decommissioned because somebody basically spilled the beans on the Greenbrier and it can no longer be used. I will tell you that, you know, when you do these type of construction, or this type of construction, you have a lot of dirt and a lot of earth, that rock, whatever, that you have to do something with. Right, and if you're building thousands and thousands and thousands of square feet, 112,000, then that's 112,000 square feet of dirt and rock. Okay, that's a lot. And what was done with all this dirt? They made a 9-hole golf course, an 18-hole golf course, and it's still up and running. As I said, it's a tourist destination. The Greenbrier is still a very nice place. There are people who pay really good money to play golf there. It's a very nice golf course from what I understand. I myself am not a golfer, but they do have tournaments there, and it costs quite a bit to play. So I guess that's how you know it's awesome, is that it has a decent cost to it. And it probably looks great. I don't know. Haven't been there. So number again is 619-924-9819. That is 619-924-9819. So there are other places, and a lot of these places are not, per se, government facilities, because the government is not the only one interested in protecting itself. Okay. You may have heard a term called the shadow government. Now, the shadow government has been acknowledged. It is a thing. Oliver North referred to it during the 80s in one of his testimonies. But when you look at these alleged NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, and you look at things like the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Affairs, you have groups of people typically well-educated, which means they went to an Ivy League school and got a piece of paper from a very expensive college. There are plenty of Ivy League idiots out there who have no grasp on reality and don't understand what it's like to live check to check or work regularly and try to make it or survive. And they basically, without that understanding, okay, and look, I don't hold any grudge, okay, you know, yeah, it would have been great if I would have been a millionaire, okay, if dad would have handed me $30 million when I turned 18 and said, hey, here you go, now here's a sweet job, and now I'll go out and do charity work, and that will make me somehow worthy of my condescension. That marinate. Okay. So, you know, the point is that there are a lot of these people who like to think that they're making a difference by giving money to charity, and they're doing maybe free work for some large company who will do advertisement in impoverished and poor areas. You know, but these people aren't doing hands-on work. And these are the type of people who look at data. And so X amount of single mothers live in this area, and X amount of these mothers are on welfare, and X amount of these mothers need this kind of assistance. And based on that information, we're going to open up a free clinic. Okay, yeah, that stuff helps, okay? But, you know, getting in there, doing hands-on work in the trenches, that's the type of stuff that makes a difference. Understanding the people you're helping makes a difference. So these shadow government people, these are the people who basically president after president may go by, senator, congressman may go away, but these people are in it for the long haul. These people are advising the government, and they are trying to keep control and to keep things moving in a certain direction. And this is what they refer to as the shadow government. Now, there's a lot of different theories on who and what constitutes a shadow government. I'm just giving you a very general idea of what this is. So, and a lot of these people, as I said, they're Ivy League, and they are from corporate backgrounds. So they either manage other people's money, or they have made a lot of money themselves through business or manipulating the stock market. And a lot of their ideas and policies are generated from business interest. Okay. Now, your policies towards Iran or towards Libya or Guam or wherever the place may be a little different than someone else's when you have a business interest that can be directly affected by anything that happens in that area. So if I own a grocery store down the road and somebody wants to put in a landfill behind my grocery store, I'm going to be against that. So I'm going to work on policy that make it illegal to put a landfill there or somehow derail that. And if they want to run an interstate close by my grocery store, then perhaps I will try and move that along because that is going to be good for my business. I'm going to get a lot more people stopping by on their way home, and maybe they're on a road trip and they need to stop and get something. So I'm going to definitely want to make sure that I develop some sort of policy or do some favor and go along with a different policy that is going to benefit my business interests, okay? That's what happens all the time when it comes to policymakers and things that are going on. So with that in mind, I want you to think about these people who are wealthy and have the money to build these large bunkers and save themselves if something happens. Now, I didn't actually address what a bunker is, so and I'm sure most people know. But again, before I go into this, the number is 619-924-9819. That is 619-924-9819. Give us a call. If you want to talk about what we're talking about or you have something else you'd like to say, definitely call in. Let me know what you're thinking. Definitely call in because, like, I haven't got to vape here in quite a while. I just keep talking, and I'm going to have to do that on air, which I don't really like to do, but Bax likes to smoke. So I put down the cigarettes well over a year ago, and I'm on to vaping. Eventually, hopefully, I'll quit that too, but it's in my mind, it's better. I've done the research, and, you know, granted, they don't have the years and years of data that they do on those gross things that come 22 a pack, but from what I can tell, this is a little bit better as long as you spend a decent amount of money. So, as I did in a couple earlier shows, this vape break is brought to you by Vapor Express of Colgrove. They're a very, very great store. Maggie and Joe, the owners, are super knowledgeable. If you are in the Ironton, Colgrove, West Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky, tri-state area, and you can make your way up there, the first exit in Colgrove. First string of businesses on the right. They are a great crew. They know what they're talking about, have a great selection. So, okay. So, again, the number 619-924-9819. That is 619-924-9819. So, what is a bunker? A bunker, and militarily speaking, is a place that houses ammunition, soldiers, supplies, built underground so as to be out of view of the population, citizens, public, or enemy. And the locations are typically unknown to all but a few. There are protected structures that you can go in and be safe. Typically, they have shielding, and they can withstand a lot of firepower and some explosions. As I said earlier, they build missiles specifically for penetrating bunkers to get in and kill enemy combatants or whoever. So now civilians and the type of bunkers that we're talking about are basically an underground area that is set up to keep you out of harm's way. So if there's disease spreading, if there is nuclear fallout, you know, whatever the problems above, you can escape below. And as I said, you know, the Green Briar had a 25-ton blast door. And this thing's, you know, built during the Eisenhower administration. So these blast doors now are probably more sophisticated. And, you know, if you're far enough back and deep enough down away from the blast door, some of these things are said to be able to survive a point-blank nuclear detonation. So basically, if a missile comes out the door, they're not going to kill everyone inside. Now, bunkers, as far as a civilian bunker goes, typically you're looking at something that is on someone's property or under their home. And I've seen old school buses because of the way that their frame is set up. They're made to roll. They're made to protect the kids inside for the most part, right? So they're pretty sturdy and they're good to use underground. You know, they'll withstand a pretty heavy amount of dirt putting on top, being stacked on top of them. Of course, you probably have to put some reinforcement underneath. Anyway, use those large metal storage containers. A lot of people use those. You can buy those for between $1,000 and $2,000, depending on the size. Of course, bigger ones you might spend a little bit more, but those are pretty good. Big steel container that you basically dig out the ground, and you drop a container inside of it, and of course, you're going to need to weigh a way to filter the air. Okay, you got to have clean air. You just have a bunch of people locked in the crate, then you're going to run out of oxygen. You're looking at around two grand to either put a container or a bus or something to that effect underground. So let's say between 2,000 and 4,000 for a decent little area. Okay. And alternatively, you can have someone build a concrete bomb shelter. Bunkers are also called bomb shelters as well. They're basically the same exact thing. Bunkers typically have larger area and are designed for long-term survival underground. You will have air filtration, which is going to cost you another probably several grand if you're wanting a really good system that's going to keep out any contaminants from up above. You're going to have a separate power source to run that. I'm sure there are other ways to do this. I'm not well versed on them, but you will have to have both of those. You will have to have some sort of waste disposal, okay, because you're going to be throwing away food waste. You're going to be throwing away bathroom waste. So you're going to need some kind of toilet or waste disposal system for that. And above and beyond that, you're going to need food, water, probably going to need a good amount of books or some kind of games, something to keep your mind going and occupied. Because let's face it, if you're in a situation where you're going to have to be in a bunker, you could be there up to 2 years. That's the amount of time it may take for the fallout and radiation to decrease in your area enough for you to leave safely. That's a scary thought. 2 years underground, you're going to need a lot of, that's a whole lot of Scrabble, all right? That is a whole lot of Scrabble. So you're going to need a lot of books. You're going to need a lot of games, especially if you have children. I think we all know how bored children get, how quickly they get bored. So, after the first month or two and they detox from their electronics, then you may get them into playing games and reading and doing other stuff, kind of keep their mind off of things. And hey, having kids in the bunker, besides the fear of something happening to them, could definitely raise your spirits and keep you occupied. But you're going to drive each other crazy because you're going to be in a confined space, all right? And being in a confined space like that for a week is going to be rough, all right? 52 of those weeks is going to be crazy. If you're going on 2 years, all right, 2 years, 104 weeks. Maybe on a leap year, that would be 104 weeks in one day. I don't know. Anyway, if you're in a bunker that long, it's going to be a nightmare. All right? You're going to have a very strict way of living. You're going to have responsible food consumption, water consumption, and it's going to be rough. It's going to be very, very rough. So anyway, these are the civilian bunkers. All right. Now we have a different kind of bunker. And the number again, if you want to call, that is 619-924-9819. That is 619-924-9819. Give us a call. Phone lines are wide open. So if you're wanting to talk about anything, you got something you want to add or a question or anything like that, please don't hesitate to call. 619-924-9819. That is 619-924-9819. So there are other bunkers, and the bunkers that are built for continuity of government are much larger. Okay, there is an area in West Virginia, and it's known as Mount Weather. Okay. Mount Weather is in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And, I mean, you can look this up online. I mean, Mount Weather is not a secret. Mount Weather is a huge place. Okay. And this is built for This is the whole point, the whole thing that we're done about the show, right? This is not for you and I. So, yeah, the government's been preparing for something. Whatever that thing is, who knows? I mean, it could be a whole bunch of things. We don't know. And they've been doing it for decades, okay? The fact that departments like the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA, it means that they're planning on a whole different bunch of things that could possibly happen. Now, the fact that they don't have a specific plan doesn't mean that nothing will happen. It just means that it's a possibility that different things can happen. And if you want to know how crazy it gets, then there was an October 25th, 2010 report from AOL News that talked about the potential threat from an incoming asteroid. We've had that scare, right? I mean, we've had asteroids come close enough to the Earth to cause concern. And that may be science fiction to you. You know, that is stuff that you see in movies. But when it comes down to the government and the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the director, John Holdren, said it was a possibility that couldn't be ignored. He wrote letters to Congress that outlined a plan for, quote, protecting the United States from a near-Earth object that is expected to collide with Earth and implementing a deflection campaign in consultation with international bodies should one be necessary. Okay, now this plan includes a collaboration between different governments and the militaries around the world in the event that NASA or the European Space Administration or whatever would spot an asteroid headed towards Earth. Now, if nothing else, there is proof here that these agencies within the government here at the United States, they dedicate time, a whole lot of money. I think FEMA alone gets $6 billion, okay, and that's not even that's just one, $6 billion a year. And they use their money and resources, whatever they have, to study these different scenarios that could possibly be Armageddon or the end of the world. Okay? Now, as I said earlier, there are people, you know, they may be your friends, they may be, I don't know who they are, but they probably think you're a wackadoo. All right, if you're one of these preppers, I think that they might think differently, that if the government is spending billions of dollars on being prepared, it might be a little worthwhile, right? It might not be so crazy to prepare for some kind of emergency if the federal government is detailing specific plans in case something like this would happen. It doesn't make you so crazy after that, all right? And when you look at places like Mount Weather, it's obvious that they believe something could happen and may happen. Now, they can't prepare for a wide-scale collapse, okay? I mean, if tens of millions of people die, no, you can't prepare for that. There's not enough money. We could just print off the money, right? There's not enough money to prepare or have a contingency plan for 10, 20 million people dying, okay? You might have some plans in place, but that's mass destruction. That's insanity, okay? And if something like that happens, the continuity of government issue and the government wasting money on bunkers is going to be the least of our problems or concerns, I'll tell you that much. But might open up some extra spaces for people like you and I. Okay. So, FEMA has what they call regions. And these regions are set up around some of the biggest cities in the country. All right. There are, as far as I know, 10 FEMA regions. I'm not sure if there are more or maybe less. I mean, I'm not a FEMA expert by any way. You can research, you know, FEMA regions and FEMA camps. There's a lot of nutty stuff out there. There is, but there's a lot of stuff that is alarmingly accurate, I guess you would say. So, I mean, FEMA, there are FEMA regions, okay? And FEMA has camps set up already. I mean, the stuff about the coffins and other things that are happening, okay, I don't know. But I do know that it's something to be aware of. Now, the cities, as far as I'm aware of, are, we'll just start with FEMA Region 1. That has Boston, so it's up there towards Maine. FEMA Region 2 is New York. FEMA Region 3 is Philadelphia, which is right around D.C. FEMA Region 4 is Atlanta. And 5, Chicago and the whole Great Lakes area. And then we have Region 6, which is down towards Texas. And when we pop up again to 7, which is around Kansas City, that whole Four Corners area. And we to 8, which is Denver, Colorado, all the way up to the top, Montana and the Dakotas. And then we have FEMA Region 9, which is Oaktown, California, Oakland, down to New Mexico. And I believe that includes Hawaii. And lastly, but not least, up towards Seattle, we have FEMA Region 10. And that may include Alaska, I think. I'm not sure. So, those are your 10 FEMA regions, and there are people assigned to be over top of those regions. There are. And that's a thing, okay? There are, and maybe it's a good thing, okay? It's not all crazy and nutty. I mean, there needs to be a way to differentiate certain areas and take control, you know, and help people if need be. But one of the alternative theories is these are ways to round up subversives and people who are against the government and speak out and like to cause problems. What is a subversive? What can be considered someone? Maybe me. Maybe I having this radio show and talking about stuff like this. You know, maybe that is a danger. I don't know. I don't know. I know they don't like people who call, you know, the government out on their bullshnocky. I rated this show PG-13, so try not to cuss too much. So if you call in, 619-924-9819, 619-924-9819, try to keep it PG-13 if you can. The FEMA regions are there. Now, as far as the camps and the coffins and all these other theories, you know, I can't say. I don't know. I have seen some information that is alarming, to say the least. I have seen people that try to go into where these camps are set up, and they are ran off by the cops. There's actually some pretty violent videos of people just trying to film. And they're online. You can find them. They're on YouTube. I don't have any specific links, but it's not hard to find. You start looking into FEMA relocation camps and death camps and yada, yada, yada. And this is part of the sifting through the material, right? We have to make sure we find out what's relevant. We have to think about what the source is and what they're saying. Just can't believe everything you see. And that includes from your local news and your national news, news stations, news sources. It's hard to sit down and look up material, and it's hard to research things. It would be nice if we could sit down and listen to the newscast and believe everything we're hearing is the truth, and that they're giving us their honest assessment of the story and not putting a whole bunch of spin on it to manipulate the way that you think about it. But that's not the case, is it? So, there are other places, okay? Some people have speculated, and this is a theory, that the Denver International Airport, which is the largest airport in the U.S., could be a base or hub, all right? From what I've seen and researched, they're not exactly sure who paid to construct the Denver International Airport. There is a cornerstone with a Freemason symbol on it, and there is a time capsule, I believe, to be opened in 2094, which is an odd date, right? Why 2094? Unless the Denver International Airport was put there in 1994. I don't know when it was constructed. If anybody else out there does, then call and let me know. 619-924-9819, 619-924-9819. But that is a weird number, 2094, unless it was 100 years after it was created, which I don't think it was. But there are plenty of conspiracies that revolve around the Denver International Airport. And a lot of them, sorry, I am trying to look up whatever the date was that that place was constructed. Let's see. 1961, maybe? Okay, so 2094 is definitely weird. This one says in 1989. So why 2094, huh? It's a good question. Any theories on that, definitely call in. So that's weird, right? I mean, we don't know who paid for it, not totally. Cornerstone with the Freemason symbol, some weird little time capsule type deal that says open in 2094, 6 years before 3000. What's that, you know, why 6 years before the turn of the millennia? Oh, I know they received federal approval for the airport. I just don't know. I don't know who paid for it. I mean, I've read over a couple different things here. It's billions of dollars over budget. Business in 1995. So maybe they completed construction in 94 and then said, okay, 2094, we'll open it. That's a possibility, okay? So there are some weird things about it. There were five buildings, and these five buildings were said to be put there incorrectly. They weren't in the right places. So we would just tear those out, right? I mean, if they're not in the right places, we're just going to take them away. And no, they decided to bury them. Let that sink in for a minute. Now, I'm not exactly sure how you bury a building or why. And hey, if there's someone out there who's an engineer or does construction and you can call in and tell me why it would be easier or better to bury a building, five buildings that you put in the wrong place as opposed to tearing them down, which I know tearing them down is going to make a mess. I don't know. Hey, I'm not an engineer. So maybe there's a valid reason why you would bury five buildings. I don't know. It just seems odd to me. Now, there's also a landfill. Now, they protested this landfill. I don't know protest, but they were against having this landfill, and it's 2 miles away. And they recently added tunnels near this. They've modified it. And from local reports and other people say that it's just odd. It looks like you can see entrances to tunnels above ground in this landfill, which I don't know why you would build a tunnel under a landfill, but from what I understand, the landfill, you dig giant holes and throw trash in it and bury it, right? Like how a landfill, I think that's like the biggest redneck thing in the world, right? That's what we do with trash. We dig a big hole and we bury it. I don't know if you've ever thought about that or not, but what are we going to do with all this trash? Well, let's dig a big hole and bury it. There are other people who put it on barges and send it out to sea. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Yeah, that it is weird, okay? And the Denver International Airport is a huge place, and it could be a hub. It could be a place set up for continuity of government because, you know, it could be a major port. It's a little far from the middle of the country, but, you know, I don't think you need to be in the exact middle, and it's set up, you know, for a lot of different things. And if you have a whole city buried underneath there, then you could definitely get there by plane pretty easily and go underneath, or make sure you come in 2 miles away at the landfill. Not going to have a lot of people around the landfill, so you don't have to worry about that too much, I would guess. Anyway, there are other bunkers that are built around the United States. I mean, ABC News has reported on tunnels chiseled out of solid granite. There's a place called the Mountain in the Cheyenne Mountains, and this has another 25-ton blast door. I guess 25 tons is the magic number. The door is 3 feet thick. This is 5 acres underground, 15 buildings. The blast door will survive a nuclear detonation. There's a 6 million gallon water supply in this place. It is definitely set up. And when 9/11 happened, the continuity of government was executed, okay? Bush was in Florida. He wanted to go back to the White House. They didn't want him to go. They convinced him not to go. I believe he went to a place in Nebraska. And maybe it was Arkansas. No, Arkansas is where they have other things. Anyway, and they learned pretty quickly that their plans weren't bulletproof because most of the government officials couldn't even get out of Washington, D.C. They were stuck. There was traffic jams. I mean, when 9/11 happened, it was madness out there. I wasn't out there, of course, but I know. I remember, and I've done research, so, you know. And if you think about that, when 9/11 happened, it was a huge, huge issue. Take 1 second here. I am still here. I'll be right back. Had to hydrate. So, when 9/11 happened, you have a large amount of people from Washington, D.C. leaving, okay? Now, when you see a bunch of politicians and probably limousines and police escorts, probably armored vehicles fleeing the city, that's going to trigger other people to flee as well, okay? They want to get out of D.C. because if someone hit the World Trade Center in New York City, World Trade Centers, then they call it center or the Twin Towers, and they hit it, then people automatically thought, oh, this is it. It's going down. We got to get out of here. Well, when you have that many people leaving the city, you have gridlock, okay? You can't get out. You're stuck. And that means you're stuck on the road. Let's say you get 45 minutes out of town before you hit the traffic jam. Then you're stuck on the road. Let's say you live off of the highway. Right? So you move far out of D.C. You don't want to live in D.C. You want to get away from the madness. And so now you've got thousands of people fleeing the city, and you're on their way out. Well, if I can't get anywhere because of the traffic jam, I'm going to take this little detour, and I'm going to go off of the road, and now you have hundreds, if not thousands, of people flooding your town, ransacking your grocery stores. See how it happens? And that goes for anything, like, I mean, whatever, any major city. What I mean, it's all going to flow out into the rural areas and the suburbs. Stuff gets bad quick, guys. That's why it's important to be prepared. All the things that we've talked about today. Because they're prepared, right? The government. Because they have taxpayer dollars. And back to, I didn't mean to finish what I was saying about Mount Weather. Mount Weather is a huge, huge, huge facility, all right? It's set up in the mountains, and you have a fire department, you have police force, you have military, you have, it's in the Blue Ridge Mountains, by the way. I mean, look up Mount Weather. I mean, all you have to do is type in Mount Weather, and you'll see it, I mean, it's surrounded by just rolling acres of trees. I mean, it's actually in a really nice place, right? And there's an underground city, okay? It's not just all above ground. And it's an emergency operations center. I mean, they've got a TV studio. Greenbrier, the one we talked about earlier, had one too. And no one knows when it was built. It's been in use since 1959. And it's used as the center of operations for FEMA, okay? And it's a major relocation site for the highest level of civilian and military officials, okay? If any natural disaster happens, boom, that's one of the places we're going. And it has the FEMA radio system, okay? And this controls federal and public safety agencies. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system, right? Boom. And the president can access that from there. And the Washington Post actually blew the lid off of this one when it was mentioned. And reporting on the December 1st, 1974 crash into Mount Weather of a TWA Flight 514. You have this big, huge facility, okay? It's a city above ground, a city below ground, located in the Blue Ridge Mountains, all right? It's only 48 miles away from D.C. It was originally a weather station. And most of Congress will be evacuated here, okay? They went there after 9/11. I want you to know that. The leadership of Congress went there by helicopter. So while all you peons are stuck in your traffic jam, the helicopters are flying them away. All right? You need to understand that all around the world and here, the elite and the government are good. They're prepared. If something happens, they've got somewhere to go. They don't have to stock up on all kinds of food and water, silver. They don't need to purchase a bunker in their yard, have someplace to go. They've already got it. You and I have forked the bill for that. The elite, the Waltons, and if you go to Irate Minority on YouTube, I have a video. It's about a 10-minute video. I mean, it is a little long-winded, I'll give you that. I did it during my stint on Front Row at the Freak Show, so it does reference Front Row at the Freak Show, but the content is still relevant because it talks about filtering what you see from the news, trying to research it on your own. But I talked about also the Walton family has built their own bunker, okay? One of the richest families on earth has constructed a bunker in case something happens. The first 72 is on you. Remember that. Every couple weeks when you go to the grocery store, buy a little bit to put back, all right? Get yourself some good, they sell food grade, they sell buckets that are food grade, okay? You can store food in them. You buy things like rice and flour, salt, and if you've got some extra cash, you can go to different websites, and this is one that comes off the top of my head. I'm not saying this is the best. Do some research on your own to find that out. But Patriot Food Supply, they usually run specials. You can get about 4 weeks worth of food for $100. And if you think about it, I go to the store every 2 weeks and spend twice that. So you can get food to at least have at your home. This stuff lasts 25 years. No, it's not going to be the best. It's probably not going to taste the best either. But the point is, you're going to have this, and you're going to have something to feed your family if something happens and you can't get food, you can't get to water. You should buy a couple extra cases of water. What's 10, 20 bucks, right? It's not like you can't drink it. Buy 5 cases, and every time you go to the store, replace 1 case. Bring it into the house, use it to drink. And if you're environmentally conscious and you don't like using all those plastic bottles, I got you, all right? Buy 5 of them, refill the bottles, put the date on the cap, all right? Or put the date on the box that you want to keep them in, whatever. There are ways to get around it. The point is, Big Brother is not coming to save you. Not immediately, anyway. And if something horrible happens, you're going to be on your own for a long time. Hell, you might even be looking for another place to live, because wherever you're at might not be safe. I'm telling you this because I'm trying to do you a favor. I'm trying to raise your awareness and help you understand that there may come a point in your life where you have to protect and watch out for your family and the people you love, because something might happen and you may not have access to food and water, electric, warmth, cool, whatever it is. But do some research on your own. Check out some of these bunkers. There are tunnels that stretch underground for hundreds, if not thousands, of miles. I don't know about thousands, but several hundred miles at least. I know that there are tunnels that go from D.C. elsewhere, okay? These people do not travel the same way you and I do. They don't live the same way you and I do. They don't view themselves the same as you and I. And we have footed the bill for this, guys. You think that each senator puts back a portion of their paycheck to help fund their evacuation plan? You think they help put a portion of all their paychecks so that they can pay for their food in the bunker? No. No. You and I get our asses taxed for it. That's how that happens. So do yourself a favor. Try and save up, try and put a little bit back, and educate people. Talk about it. Work it out in your community. Talk to your neighbors. What's going to happen if something goes down? Can I count on you? If I have the water, can you hold back some food? If I have the guns, will you help buy some ammunition? Hopefully it doesn't come to that, and hopefully you don't need that. But safety is important. So, I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. I'm going to go ahead and cut it short here. Had a good time talking about some of the different bunkers and things that are going on. If you want to catch me on irateminority.net, I've been doing some blog posting. You can catch me on YouTube, Irate Minority, Facebook, Irate Minority, Twitter, @_IrateMinority_. And you can catch me on Facebook as well. My name is Bax Baxton. Send me a friend request or email. Let me know what you want to talk about. So it's been a great show. We'll definitely post the topic of next week's show here within the next day or so. And remember, keep safe, keep the discussion alive, and apparently the first 72 is on you. Have a good night.